The Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. Jamie's back next week. I've been flying solo this week. My name is Locker, and we are joined by Dave Naylor, our Green Zone football analyst. The team negotiation list dropped yesterday. This is the first time that all nine teams in the league have made them public. Why? Why now, Dave?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with Stuart Johnston, who is a media guy by background and looks for things that is information and things to engage fans and things that might grab headlines. And he looks at the negotiation list and says, wow, like, why are we keeping that shelved? And I'll tell you a story. The day before the CFL draft this year, I broke the story that the Argonauts had put Shedeur Sanders on their negotiation list. So this is like 48 hours after he falls to the fifth round, the Cleveland Browns, after being projected as a top 10 pick, right? That, and I got a leak. Somebody said it to me, and I reported it. That story got reported around North America. I mean, I was the source of Pro Football Talk, Yahoo Sports. Like, you go through them all. And I had saved all those screenshots on my phone. And when I saw Stuart Johnston that night at the draft, I said, can I show you something? And I just rolled through the nine screenshots about, you know, the Toronto Argonauts having put Shedeur Sanders on the negotiation list. I said, you know, it's not bad publicity from one tweet. And look, I think Stu was probably already, you know, thinking this way, but I was trying to kind of inspire him a little bit, because this has been an issue. It's not a game changer overnight, okay? Just for fans who may not be aware, because this is kind of a clandestine thing, but basically, every CFL team has up to 45 names. They could be guys in college. They could be guys in the NFL. And if you see a guy that you think of, that you think might play in the CFL and might be the right kind of player for our game, you put him on your list. Patrick Mahomes was on a neg list. You know, players like former New Orleans running back Darren Sproles, you know, undersized, speedy guy. Those were guys that, you know, CFL teams put on neg list. Johnny Manziel was on a neg list for 6 years.
Yeah.
Chad Kelly's probably been on a neg list about 6 years. You know, again, highly talented guy, might play his way out of the NFL, and what do you know? In fact, of course, the Argos traded Nick Arbuckle to Edmonton for the rights to Chad Kelly. But for some reason, this has all been a secret. And this goes back to the incorporation of the modern Canadian Football League in 1958. And I think what you want to do with this is basically allow your fans to see who are the players that the Saskatchewan Rough Riders are looking at for their future. Oh, here they are, the 45 names. And keeping that secret was kind of like, you know, if you held the draft in secret and didn't tell anybody who the picks were. It just never made any sense. And you used to hear reasons why. It was like, well, college coaches would freak out if they knew their players had their rights claimed by a professional team. Well, now they're paying players, so that's kind of sailed. Or teams would say, oh, we don't want our guys knowing who, you know, we're looking at to replace them. Like, you know, is Trevor Harris going to have any trouble throwing the football this year because the Saskatchewan Rough Riders have Trey Lance on the negotiation list? I mean, everybody in professional football is always under siege of being replaced. That's the nature of the beast. So Stuart Johnston came in and said, this is an asset to us. Why are we have this under lock and key? And I'm frankly impressed that, you know, within 2 months,
yeah,
got done.
Yeah, it's interesting. Good for him. Like, at least it's a conversation for us on, you know, in the media.
Bingo. And when it's a conversation for football nerds. And when a big name gets added, it's a headline. You know, and why are we doing this behind the curtain? And I'll tell you the significance of this locker is this: Stuart Johnston came in saying, we are going to look at the way we do or don't do things and ask why. And tradition and just that's the CFL way and that's they've always done it is not going to necessarily be the deciding. It won't be the deciding factor. And that's easy to say. There have probably been other people who've said similar things, but this is the first concrete example of something that, like, you know, Randy and Rosie did the release 10 names twice a year, but that almost just highlighted how ridiculous it was that the other five were under wraps. The fact that this guy got this done, I don't think this is going to be the last thing that's been done a very traditional way that Stuart Johnston says, hold on a second.
Fingers crossed he fixes the rouge. Now let's move on to the backup quarterbacks. We've seen quite a few in the league already, and we're only week five into the season. Is that concerning, Dave?
It is. And look, I'll tell you, there's been more injuries than we would have expected this part of the season. And mm-hmm. the play of the backup has been, I would say, poorer than we would have expected. You know, as our guys have made the point on the broadcast saying, you know, these aren't traditional backups. These are guys that were starters, you know, for multiple years and starters a year ago. And, you know, guys like Jake Mayer and guys like Jeremiah Mazzoli and guys like Dustin Crum, they've all had either number one gigs or periods of time where they started a lot of games, in Crum's case, just because of injury. So we would have expected, I think, a higher level of play. But a couple of things I think really affect the entertainment value. One is they're not the number ones. If they were number ones, they'd be number ones. Two, I think the play calling becomes very conservative, especially yeah. if you've got a team like Saskatchewan that can play defense and run the ball. You're not going to ask Jake Meir to go out there and throw it 41 times. So the play calling becomes very conservative. And this is where I think also early in the season, especially, you know, the shorter training camp, the shorter practice days, you know, backups don't get a ton of reps in the CFL. So, you know, when your starter gets hurt and you happen to be on a week where it's, you know, two practices and a walkthrough, that's not a lot of time for a starter to get up to snuff, even if he's had a lot of experience. So it is concerning. The question, and I may dig into this sometime, Walker, because this would take some time. And I don't, not everything we do has to be a comparison to the National Football League. Yeah. I understand. But I would really be interested in looking at the rate of starting quarterback injuries between the two leagues. And it certainly feels like it's a lot higher in the CFL. I know there are years in the NFL where they had a lot. 2 years ago, they had a lot. Yeah. But it certainly feels like it's a lot higher in the CFL. And if, in fact, it is, then we can start asking the question, why? Because it's, you know, this is the entertainment value of the game. I don't have to tell you. You've been watching. You know what it looks like with the backups. You know what it looks like with the starters.
Dave Naylor, our Green Zone football analyst, joining us today. We asked this question yesterday, and I think you'll get the reason why we've been asking it. But I'm curious about where you'll go with it. Who's the best team in the CFL right now?
I think when Davis Alexander is playing, it's still Montreal.
Okay,
you know that Hamilton has all those weapons on offense and a healthy Bo Levi Mitchell in Montreal's defense. You know, declawed them for most of that game. So I don't think we saw any less appreciation for Montreal's defense based on them losing to Hamilton. But I think that, you know, you see the difference when Davis Alexander isn't there. I think a healthy Montreal Alouette team is the best team in the league. But I'll tell you, what really has me intrigued about the schedule, well, a few things, but one of them is the schedule. I mean, here they are at the bye at 4-0. Look at the schedule. Calgary at Regina, Saskatchewan at BC. We just saw what that looked like. And who knows, Nathan Rourke may be back then, and that would be a totally different game. I expect he would be back. And then you've got Edmonton at Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, without getting too far ahead of ourselves, it's not hard to say those are all very winnable games for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, and they could be 7-0 when they ride into Montreal on the 2nd of August in what I think we all already forecast as a battle between the two best teams in the league. And yeah, the thing that, one of the things that just stands out to me about Saskatchewan is, you know, winning the line of scrimmage, right? Leading the league in rushing yards per game, number one in rushing yards against, you know, high in sacks, low in sacks given up. You know, we can talk about the stars of the game and the exciting plays, but a lot of people will still tell you that football is won in the trenches at the line of scrimmage. And I think that's where it starts for the Rough Riders. So, you know, given that they've been dealing with a number of injuries, you know, teams will always say, quarter way into the season, oh, you know, we've had so many injuries. Well, they all have. But, you know, Saskatchewan said the injuries, they're 4-0.
We're going to hook up with Dave once again here and get his thoughts on Week 5 matchups in the CFL next on the Green Zone. And should we be disregarding this weekend's Sunday matchup between Ottawa and Edmonton? Again, that's next, 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. I'll be in the street. This is the Green Zone. Jamie Locker, I'm Locker. Jamie will be back with us next week. Dave Naylor, our Green Zone football analyst, still hanging out with us. Week 5 matchups. So we got the Thursday nighter tonight, the Bombers and the Stampeders. This is the inaugural Stampede Bowl. So they've got a trophy, and this is going to be an annual event. This is sort of a a precursor to Stampede, Calgary Stampede, which is running July 4th through till the 12th or 13th. And it looks like it's going to be an event. And it's, I like it. I don't hate it. It's a good way to tie in the Stampede and the CFL. So you're going to probably hear more about the Stampede Bowl. That's tonight's matchup in the Thursday night. The Friday nighter, we got Hamilton and Toronto. We got Saturday night, BC and Montreal. It looks like Nathan Rourke is going to be back for BC, and it doesn't look like Davis Alexander is going to be throwing the ball for Montreal. And then Sunday night, we got Ottawa and Edmonton. That game is in Edmonton, so the Elks hosting there. And Dave, give us your thoughts on the Week 5 matchups, and is it all about Stampede Bowl and the Thursday nighter?
I think a lot of people's expectations for Winnipeg going into this year maybe kind of come down a notch. Like the slow start last year, the losing three straight Grey Cups, certainly more roster turnover. I mean, some guys who have been, you know, heart and soul players on that team moving on, you know, Kenny Lawler, Adam Big Hill. And yet the Bombers right now, you know, look like they're going to battle Saskatchewan for the lead of that division. And, you know, give Trey Ford and Edmonton some credit. That was a tough assignment last week. Going into Winnipeg, that sellout crowd, you know, Trey had some issues with communication in the huddle line of scrimmage when they played in front of the big big crowd in BC. You know, that got cleaned up. And there was a point in that game where it looked like they were just going to be out of it. And I thought the fact that, you know, I know teams never want to hear about moral victories, but when you've been where Edmonton's been, and you're still trying to develop a young quarterback, the fact that they didn't get blown out of that game, that they hung in, I thought was a real significant accomplishment, although they wouldn't want to hear that. But, you know, the game that kind of intrigued me a little bit is the one on Sunday, because you know that Edmonton is looking at the schedule going, okay, there's a game we can win, Ottawa, right?
Yeah.
And Ottawa's looking at the schedule going, okay, there's a game we can win, Edmonton. And, you know, when you see those kind of teams colliding, sometimes you get a good game. We'll see whether we get Drew Brown in that one, and would certainly be, you know, a measure up. But I think this is a good test for a Calgary Stampeder team. That, speaking of teams that we think are playing better than we expected, you know, they're lost to Ottawa, notwithstanding, in the Hurricanes, or to light conditions. But I think this is kind of a test, maybe, how real are the Stamps? You know, when Winnipeg rolls in there, I know they're at home and they're building this up as the Stampede Bowl. If they can give Winnipeg a good fight, I think that would be a real measure of respect earned to the Calgary Stampeders.
Bob McKenzie, he's on the hockey side, but I'm guessing that over the years, he was at TSN for 20-plus years, was he not? My guess is that you ran into him on occasion, and he called it a career 48 years in the business on Tuesday after a free agency frenzy.
Yeah, an amazing run. And, you know, I remember Bob McKenzie as a hockey news guy. I remember him as a Toronto Star columnist. In fact, when I broke into the business, he had just started appearing on television in TSN, but he was a columnist for the Toronto Star.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was kind of the one who, you know, cut the path for newspaper writers to adapt and become, you know, personalities covering sports on television. And when TSN created the CFL insider role and hired me about 15 years ago, and, well, I started doing it part-time, kind of like Bob. I did exactly what Bob did. While I was working for the Globe and Mail, I started playing the insider role on TSN, and then I finally went over full-time, exactly what Bob had done. But, you know, I think TSN kind of modeled the creation of my job on what they'd done with Bob McKenzie. And I know that what I did when I was developing that role was a lot of like, well, what would Bob McKenzie do? And how would he approach this? And what would be content for him? So Bob showed the way. Bob cut the path. I'm grateful to him for that and everything he's ever shared with me. And it's an amazing media career. He will be missed, but not forgotten.
There's a tornado warning in the southeast corner of the province from Redvers and Walkup area. Environment Canada says it's tracking a storm that is possibly going to produce a tornado, damaging winds, hail, intense rain, also a possibility. We've got more from our newsroom coming up here in just a bit. The Oilers have been one of the busiest, if not the busiest, teams in the NHL during free agency. Brendan Escott from Oilers Now, Chet 880, is up next on the Green Zone. We'll have a conversation with him about what the Oilers have done so far, some of the moves that they have made, some of the changes that they made, and some of the changes that potentially could be happening this summer. I predicted before free agency that Edmonton was going to be a pretty active team out of free agency, and I have a feeling that it's not over yet. They don't have a lot of cap room left, and it's going to be difficult to make moves, but we'll also, with Brendan, get into the conversation about the goalie situation, and yes, we'll talk about the pending McDavid contract negotiations as well, whether or not he'll sign and when. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. This is the Green Zone. Jamie and Walker. Jamie's back next week. I am flying solo. Quick update in the Jays-Yankees game. Bassett's on the mound. Second inning. Jays got one in the first. So they're up 1-0. They are going for the sweep. Brendan S. Scott. He is the host of Inside Sports, producer of Oilers Now on Ched 880 out of Edmonton. Here to talk a little Oilers and the activity during free agency over the last week or so for Edmonton. Let's start, Brendan, with the positive. What changes have you seen the Oilers make that you like?
Well, I love the Andrew Mangiapane deal. To be honest with you, I think that at that price point, $3.6 million over a couple of years for a player that has the flexibility to work around the lineup, play either wing, probably not center in the way that things shake down here, but certainly a penalty-killing option. I think that this is somebody that they had pretty high up on their list entering free agency, just given where he was going to check in on the cap and given what the team's needs were. So I like this a lot, but really, Locker, I think it's mostly about who they were able to keep, and that is Evan Bouchard and Trent Frederick. And Frederick, yeah. I know that deal being 8 years long caused a lot of eyebrows to go up and a lot of eyes to pop out of heads. I understand why. That's a big commitment for a guy who is, at best, maybe a 20-goal scorer. But because of the element that he brings to this team, especially now in the absence of Evander Kane, they couldn't really afford to let that walk away. And so when there was mutual interest in the player, they got Trent Frederick done at a price point that I believe he can play up to, without a doubt. Another guy that has some versatility and can play center and that sort of thing. And lastly, as I say, Evan Bouchard for a $10 million, $10.5 million price tag. I'm told that there were teams ready to offer sheet Evan Bouchard as he was ready to step into free agency this year, or restricted free agency again. And they avoid that by committing an awful lot of money to a player that we do see make boo-boos in November, without a doubt, but is someone they also couldn't afford to lose.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't think there's anything that they could have paid Bouchard that would make the fans happy. He's just going to have to sort of put a helmet on and get used to it. Right? It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because he does have an upside. And when you score goals, you make money in the NHL, and he's going to make money. But fans have a tendency to start comparing contracts, and they see what Florida did with Ekholm. And so, yeah, everyone's up in arms. I'm interested in your theory on why he only went 4 years. Again, we're not going to get the details of it on how it all went down, but there was a conversation that he would sign longer than 4 years at one point. So do you have thoughts on that?
Certainly. I think that essentially this makes sense for the Bouchard camp in a way that when the salary cap is what it is in 4 years, he's basically betting on himself again. This is that bridge deal to get him to 30 years old, at which point he can likely cash in at a very similar dollar value, if not more. But what the Oilers have done is still manage to secure his prime years of age 26, 27, 28, and 29 with this deal. And you're getting a player who, again, I love the way that McDavid put it in his end-of-season presser. He's like, you got to live with the boo-boos in November because of what he does when the playoffs roll around.
Yeah.
And the stats are there to back that up. He did have a down year, statistically speaking, in the regular season. The power play wasn't what we know it can be. But the year before that, he was a point-a-game player in 82 games. So coming from the back end, that's impressive stuff, and it is an anomaly across this league. It's the closest thing they're going to get to a Quinn Hughes or a Cale Makar or that sort of thing, a Lane Hutson, what have you. And when you get assets like that, you have to keep them. So I think that Bouchard sees the Stanley Cup window being open for the next 4 years. And I'm sure we'll talk about what McDavid's term or what have you might look like moving forward as well. I would imagine that that's the ballpark he will be in at the very least. So Bouchard's looking at the situation saying, I can cash in and still be a part of things with, you know, a little bit of flexibility on the roster here.
You forget that he's only 26, eh? Like,
yeah. Oh, very much so.
Every time that comes up, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. He's still quite young. Anyway,
lots of guys have the opportunity to develop in the minor leagues in the shadows. Evan Bouchard has had to develop in front of a fan base that is absolutely rabid and will pick guys apart, as you know, Walker.
Yeah.
He's been around for a long time, and it does feel that way.
Joined by Brendan S. Scott and from Ched 880. Brendan, I want to get into some of the moves that have been made, or maybe just to highlight one of them that surprised you. There's a couple here. I think we all sort of saw the Corey Perry thing. Was it Connor Brown? What departure was the one that you were like, oh, really?
Well, I think Corey Perry priced himself out of the market, so that's fair to suggest that we could see that one coming. The amount that he got in Los Angeles, though, made my jaw hit the floor. So if you want to go be the villain in L.A. and try and be a part of things as they look to climb the mountain that is Edmonton in the first round, by all means. Connor Brown is an interesting one because I think that, like, that is an awful lot of money and term for New Jersey to commit to a guy who shows flashes and can penalty kill, but mm-hmm. was also part of a penalty kill that regressed significantly this year. Mm-hmm. And you know, he was excellent in the playoffs up until he got laid out by Alex Petrovich. Mm-hmm. And from that point forward, he was never really as effective. And when it matters the most, you need these guys to be effective. So I was disappointed to see there wasn't more of an appetite for some of these guys to stick around and try and urge this, nudge it across the finish line, rather. But go get paid at the same time. You've only got so much runway left in your career, and he just secured $12 million. I don't think Edmonton would have touched that anywhere close.
Yeah. The Skinner move, that didn't surprise me. Arvidsson, I think everyone saw that coming. That Kane to Vancouver, they dodged a bullet there because they didn't retain any of the salary. That one, I'm not surprised he's gone because you kind of saw the end of his run there in the last series against Florida. But that one, we could put that on the list of surprises with Connor Brown, I guess, eh?
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. He was. He effectively was taken out of the Stanley Cup final by virtue of the penalties that he was taking. A lot of that was to do with him, a little bit to do with over-policing by the officials, I am offering my honest opinion. But that's what comes with the reputation that he's built up over the last 10-plus years in the NHL. So, yeah, I think it had run its course in Edmonton. But the last thing that you want to do is have him come to town 4 times a year or 3 times, whatever it's going to be, and make you pay for it, because he's the type of guy that I foresee wanting to inflict that kind of damage on the team that he once was striving to get the Stanley Cup with.
Yeah, I don't think that's you're not too far out on a ledge by yourself on that one, Brendan, on that opinion. Is there a chance that this team is, and it's pure speculation, this team is better right now than they were when they were flying home from Florida after losing another Stanley Cup to that awful Florida Panthers team?
I don't believe so. I don't think they've added enough yet.
Okay.
And I'm curious to see what adding looks like at this point, because a little bit of it is going to come internally. Like, you've got Matthew Savoy on his way, and lots of excitement in our marketplace about what he has to offer. But he's also going to be a 21-year or 22-year-old kid playing alongside Leon Draisaitl, if he can. That's a lot to ask of him. So, you know, you're hoping for organic growth, but at the same time, that's a lot of players that have walked away from a Stanley Cup final roster.
Yeah.
And they've only really recuperated a fourth line center in Curtis Lazar, which I did like, by the way, a lot.
Yeah.
And Andrew Mangiapane, as we talked about. So we'll see what other additions they have to make. Noah Philp is another internal option that I know they're looking at, but I think that his roster spot just was maybe put into question by the addition of Curtis Lazar. So they've got a lot to decide on and not a lot of money to divvy out, shall we say, to make things happen.
Do you think the Oilers will upgrade their goalie situation before the start of the next season? So on top of keeping an eye on the other changes, because and I said this before free agency, Brendan, I thought that the Edmonton Oilers were going to be one of the busier teams this offseason. But do you think they're going to take care of the goalie situation, or are we going to be looking at a Skinner-Pickard start?
Everything that is being relayed to us right now indicates that they are trying as hard as they can to make sure that they don't return the same duo to start the season.
Yeah.
That being said, Matt Tompkins was the goaltender that they went out and signed as an organizational number three. He's played six NHL games last year, I believe, with Tampa. So, or six in his entire career, now that I think about it, former Sherwood Park Crusader. He is not an answer in goal. What I think you might see is the most significant change after the longest period of time, might I add, is the goaltending coach. The coaching staff contracts are, and we haven't had official word on this, it's been rumored that Dustin Schwartz might be on his way out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, is that kind of change enough to satisfy the fan base to say, okay, well, here's, you know, somebody, a sacrificial lamb, so to say, for the developmental stagnancy of Stuart Skinner over the last year?
Yeah.
He hasn't improved, so we can call it being stagnant. And if you present them a new goaltending coach, does that reengage the hope enough? I don't know if that's enough of a change, but I'm sure that's one angle at which they're looking to provide a change for the goaltending service.
One champ, one chump, daily here on the Green Zone, and the champ is pretty easy. We're going with Shania. Why? That's next. 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
You two are winners. Big winners.
I think you're shagadelic, baby. You're switched on. You're smashing.
You tried your best, and you failed miserably.
The only thing I'm addicted to right now is winning.
You're an idiot.
You're a bad person.
One chump, one champ, daily here on the Green Zone. We're going chumpless today, and our champ is Shania Twain. She is donating $25,000 to support insecurity, food insecurities in Moose Jaw, ahead of her July 7th concert at the Events Center. By the way, if you're a big Shania Twain fan, you might want to look into tickets. There's not many left, but you could still get yourself into the building. And again, that is July 7th, so not too far away from that. She is working with Second Harvest, and the donation will help 75,000 meals to go to local families in need in Moose Jaw. Six nonprofit partners, including the Moose Jaw and District Food Bank, will directly benefit from her donation, from this support, as food insecurity, not just in Moose Jaw, but around this country, is a daily concern. So $25,000 from Shania Twain. That is absolutely huge. She is a well worthwhile champ today. She sold over 100 million records. Her full name, by the way, Eileen Regina Twain, which is interesting. I didn't know that until I looked it up today. I didn't know that she had Regina as a middle of name. A best-selling female artist in country music history, and she's Canadian. That is just absolutely fantastic. She grew up in Timmins, Ontario, and from what I was reading, I'm not a huge country fan. I do know Shania Twain, of course, but she started quite young, playing in festivals and things like that in the summer at a very young age, and then started sneaking into bars before she was of age. They call her the Queen of Country Pop. And again, like I said, our Green Zone champ today, Shania Twain, donating $25,000 ahead of her July 7th concert in Moose Jaw at the Event Center. The good news is, if you're a big fan, you can still get yourself some tickets. By the way, if you are in Regina tonight, I am hosting with Ralco Woody at Broadway Lounge their trivia night. They do it on the first Thursday. They do one up in Saskatoon as well, but in Regina, they do it on the first Thursday of every month. So if you're looking for something to do, they're always a lot of fun, those trivia nights, and I'm looking forward to doing that. Pop in and say hi. We usually get going shortly after 6 o'clock, so you got to be close to get there on time. Tomorrow's Green Zone, J.C. Abbott from Three Down Nation. We'll talk about the Thursday nighter. Obviously, we've got the Blue Bombers and the Stampeders tonight. The Stampede Bowl is what they're calling it, the first one. We also have a lot of sports business to get to. Tom Manek is the host of the Sports Market, heard here on the weekends. So looking forward to my chat with Tom. We're going to hook up with my son-in-law, my future son-in-law, Craig, and talk baseball. He's a massive Yankees fan. Also, Diener of Foo Bar fan, our fame, I should say, is going to be joining the Green Zone tomorrow. What could go wrong? This is 980 CGME and 650 CKOM.